1, 2, 3.
Welcome to In the Studio with a 21st century perspective on history's biggest rock album. I'm Redbeard, and today in the studio, the surprise first solo project that showed us Phil Collins' enormous hidden talents at face value.
Then my marriage broke up, and then I sort of said I was leaving to go and live in Vancouver. And the guy said, hang on, don't leave. Let's just put things on ice for a bit. We'll do our solo albums. Now, when they had finished their solo albums and I'd come back from Vancouver with nothing having changed in regard to my personal situation, I had a lot more time and energy because it was something for me to do, you know, and my marriage hadn't repaired itself. So I was looking for things to channel my energies into. Tony and Mike had their first solo albums, I was doing mine.
We always need to hear both sides of the story. Both sides of the story.
Welcome back to In the Studio. I'm Phil Collins with Redbeard.
Both sides of the story.
Phil Collins joins me next in the studio for the 40th anniversary of Face Value. A funny thing happened to British progressive rock drummer Phil Collins when the band's high-profile, charismatic frontman Peter Gabriel left in the mid-70s. When the band, not surprisingly, couldn't find a singer, the drummer, who could sing and sound uncannily similar to Gabriel, was forced to step up, I mean way up, to the front of the stage. Turns out the unlikely long-shot experiment worked, and Phil Collins got to like the view from the front enough to inspire him to write songs with no preconceived restrictions on how they would eventually be arranged. The other two remaining members of Genesis actually released solo albums first, so despite revisionist history to the contrary, it was no big deal for Phil Collins to do likewise in February 1981, and certainly no threat to the continuing of the Genesis band mothership. But as you will hear from Phil, there certainly were other threats to the status quo. To learn the surprising story, I caught up with Phil Collins literally just days out of the hospital recovery room, where Phil had just undergone critical spinal surgery to correct weakness and pain in his arms and hands from a degenerating disc in his neck.
I had back surgery about Saturday, and it's an ugly story, but basically I've got to try getting up and walking because I can't walk at the moment. I'm rediscovering myself with some of the live material that's coming out on the double albums as they're going to come out. You know the plot, right? You know there's Face Value and Face Value Extras and Both Sides and Both Sides Extras, and the next couple of albums will be Hello Must Be Going. So, you know, I've got to pick extra songs for those albums. But the process of doing that is kind of, you know, rediscovering for me, as I'm hoping it's going to be rediscovering from an audience point of view, because, you know, so many people now are listing me as an influence in their early music career that, you know, people are going to go out and say, who is this guy they're talking about? Dad, you know, granddad. So they're going to better get a chance to rediscover and reassess.
Must be some kind of wish.
but got no answer. So I jumped in my car, I went round there. Still don't believe it, he was just leaving. Now there must be some misunderstanding, or there must be some kind of mistake. Oh, there must be some misunderstanding, or there must be some kind of mistake. Oh, there must be misunderstanding.
Live version of Phil Collins' 1980 hit song Misunderstanding for his longtime progressive rock band Genesis, now found on the bonus disc of Face Value, really swings even more than the Genesis studio version on the Duke album. Just as the Genesis star rose to new heights, Phil Collins was having the opposite experience in his personal life then.
Then my marriage broke up, and then I sort of said I was leaving to go and live in Vancouver. And the guy said, hang on, don't leave. Let's just put things on ice for a bit. We'll do our solo albums. Now, when they had finished their solo albums and I'd come back from Vancouver with nothing having changed in regard to my personal situation, I had a lot more time and energy because it was something for me to do, you know, and I kind of, my marriage hadn't repaired itself, so I was looking for things to channel my energies into. Tony and Mike had their first solo albums. I was doing mine. We'd only lived, me and my wife and children, I'd only lived at this house for a few months before we split up. So we hadn't really settled in properly. So when I got my recording equipment, I moved the master bed, if you want, into the secondary bedroom and had the master bedroom as my studio, which was next door to the secondary bedroom. So we recorded a lot of stuff just on 8-track.
It's all been a pack of lies.
year after year since its initial release the first week of February 1981 on Phil Collins' first solo album, Face Value, In the Air Tonight has been one of the most popular songs ever. Even though the subject matter is righteous rage over personal betrayal, I still cringe at the vengeful line, "If you told me you were drowning, I would not lend a hand." Ooh, that's cold-blooded. I had to ask the composer and singer if he ever regretted having such a personal sentiment be out there in the public domain so prominently.
No, I had never had any regrets. It was the first song, first line that I thought of when the song started. You know, those lyrics were improvised. I never wrote them down. They were improvised. The song started, I was at home, I was, you know, practicing getting my machines working, and my mic was, I tapped it a couple of times and it was working. So I started singing, and I said, "If you told me you were drowning, I would not lend a hand. I've seen your face before, my friend. I don't know if you know who I am." What I did was, after I finished singing it, I then wrote them down on some paper so I didn't forget them. And who'd have thought, on the back side of that paper is the decorator's name and address.
Took you so long.
Another hit, I Missed Again, emerged from Phil Collins' first solo album, Face Value, with a respectable top 20 showing on Billboard's Hot 100 in the U.S. But Phil Collins' biggest hit, written at the time, would not appear on Face Value, or even its 1982 follow-up, Hello, I Must Be Going. Find out the fascinating story of Against All Odds from Phil Collins next. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio on the 40th anniversary of Face Value.
Welcome back to In the Studio. I'm Phil Collins with Redbeard.
Thank you, my friend. After working with a relatively large progressive rock band for a decade, the advent of personal professional recording gear about that time, combined with the prospect of being suddenly single in a big house, allowed Phil Collins to experiment with a whole new way of creating music.
That really set up the way I wrote songs. I mean, I would improvise like a jazz musician. I would improvise and sing lyrics and first take, second takes. I'd listen back to what I'd sung or sounded like I was trying to sing. All very, you know, organic. And I would from then on start using my demos on every record I made. You know, I'd always start with a demo, and then I'd transfer the demo to multi-track, and then I'd get some other musicians, guitar players that I didn't play guitar, and you know, horn players, of course, I did play horns. But other people that I knew that would play, but the template was always there, which was the demo. So that's the way I started doing this, and that's the way I've been doing it all these years.
How can I just let you walk away? Just let you leave without a trace? When I stand here taking every breath with you, ooh, you're the only one who really knew me at all. Take a look at me now.
originally entitled How Can You Just Sit There? Against All Odds was available in rough demo form for both face value in 1981 and its follow-up for Phil Collins' Hello, I Must Be Going, and yet it was passed over twice, only after being invited to contribute it to director Taylor Hackford's 1984 love triangle film Against All Odds did Phil Collins finish it up with a proper recording for the movie soundtrack. The single movie theme ironically exploded, becoming Phil Collins' first number one hit in America, his first Grammy Award winner, and nominated for an Oscar at the Academy Awards.
The demo that's on the companion CD for Face Value has got the demo version without a lyric on it, but you know, I did have lyrics at that time, and they did go, how can you just walk away from me? Well, all I can do is watch you leave. I mean, I had pretty much finished lyrics to these songs because that's what was happening to my life. And I think probably when Taylor Hackford wanted a song, and I said, I can't write on the road, but I can send you something I've finished that I don't think much of. Well, I didn't say that. I didn't think enough of it to put it on the album, put it that way. But he loved it, of course. You know, he made me change a couple of lyrics, and he made me sing Against All Odds each time it came around, which was a little irritating. But yeah, he just took it and ran with it. I was pleased to have a home for this song. Interestingly enough, you know, kind of wrote itself, and it's been played everywhere and sung by loads of people, and I'm very proud of it, you know.
The hook of Phil Collins' Against All Odds is the refrain, Take a Look at Me Now, which serves perfectly as the theme to a year-long catalog development series for all of Phil Collins' solo efforts.
You know, it's basically an opportunity to rediscover and reassess my stuff. You know, I mean, you realize along the way that a lot of people think they know you. Some of them do, but a lot of them don't. You know, they think they know you by the songs they're plied with on the radio. You know, in the air tonight, I missed against the studio, two arts, can't I love. That's what Phil Collins has become over the years, because I've been around such a long time. Whereas there were so many new artists that have said that I was an influence on their music or stuff when they were growing up. Well, it's wonderful. I mean, I don't hear about this. I only hear about it third hand, like Lily, you know, my actress, star daughter. She, have you seen what Pharrell Williams is saying about you? Have you seen about what Lord is saying about you? Have you seen about this person, that person? And I haven't, but she shows me and I read it and I think, oh, that's nice. But this is seemed to me a bit of an opportunity to, you know, kill a few birds with one stone. You know, let people hear what they've missed, make it sound better along the way. There's, you know, when you write an album back in my day, you wrote 11 strong, 12 strong songs. Yeah, you know, and that don't happen anymore. And CD, you know, has kind of meant you cherry pick the best three or four and then you fill in the rest. One was as good as another, as far as I was concerned. There was no In the Air Tonight or Another Day in Paradise as a standout. They were just the second song or the third song or the fourth song. So, what, you know, one hopes that people will rediscover a whole bunch of material they missed.
Phil Collins enlisted young recording engineer Hugh Padgham to help him organize Phil's Face Value demos, and the working relationship soon blossomed into a series of Philco's solo albums as well as Genesis' biggest albums in the 80s.
Hugh Padgham was enormously useless. No, he was enormously useful. He, I met him with Peter Gabriel on the third album for Peter, and we'd bonded. You know, he was a bass player and he liked a good drummer and I was a good drummer, so we hit it off very well. I played in my demos. I don't know if he saw the magic in the demos, but he certainly, you know, was open to the idea that I had, that I was going to use the demos and we were not going to multitrack again. But he fitted on board straight away and I trusted his opinion. We went to work on, as you know, for many, many records. I felt like it was time to change. Eventually, I did that. I think that change was with both sides because I wanted to, you know, use somebody new that I just met. But it was, you know, he was great. I saw him not long ago, the release of the Genesis DVD documentary. And he came and he's doing very well, sent his love, you know. you know, you're part of these guys' lives. It's great to stay in touch. And, you know, it's awful when someone walks out of a room as there's another person walks in it. So we're in good shape.
Both sides of the story.
The anchor song Both Sides of the Story continued the shift away from the intimately personal to macro societal issues for Phil Collins. And coming up next, we wait and we wonder for the reveal. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, on Twitter at Redbeard Rocks, and online 24/7 at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard in the studio as Phil Collins invites you to take a look at me now.
Welcome back to In the Studio. I'm Phil Collins with Redbeard.
Thank you again, Philip. Revisiting the basic building blocks of source tape recordings decades ago, in the case of Face Value and Hello, I Must Be Going, is an eye-opening experience. For instance, the demo of Against All Odds is a humble cassette tape with so much tape hiss that Phil's piano sounds like it's in the shower with the water running.
Thank God there was 16-track back in the day, otherwise there'd have been no... Da 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 da. You know, I filled up all the tracks there were. There were, but on both sides there was only 12 tracks. I mean, I only had 12 tracks of demos. Yeah, 12 track Akai machine at home. That was, and so those are all my demos on that track, that album. And then we just went in there and copied the tapes and did some drum overdubs. You know, I mean, it's lovely to look back on it. There's stuff in there that actually audio files are saying, this album sounds fantastic, remastered. I never thought there was much fuss to be made about it, you know. I mean, I listen to music on the computer, you know, on my computer. And if it sounds good on there, then it's good enough for me. So I'm very pleased with the technology that's taking place. And it's enabled these old albums, because, you know, it's really... painting a picture and putting all the colours up yourself, you know. I did say this at the time, I think. It's a bit like, you know, Michelangelo or something. I mean, I'm not putting myself up there, believe me. But you get Michelangelo sort of getting Leonardo da Vinci to come in and say, could you put a bit of blue in that corner? And he says, well, you put it where you want it. He says, no, you put it there. I mean, he says, no, you do it. It's your vision, you do it. Doesn't matter if it's the same kind of blue that I was going to put, but just, you know, it's just one of those things to me where that album to me was, I didn't want anybody else messing around with it. Even though I play, you know, synthesizer guitar very badly, you know, I put synthesizer guitar on because it was me playing synthesizer guitar and making a nice noise, you know. I just make a nice noise on any instrument, you know, and I synthesizers now have got some pretty good guitar sounds and pretty good bass sounds, and so I would just go and play a bass part that would be a little bit unethical. So really, that's my excuse. I mean, I could have got the best players in the world to play it, but it wouldn't have been me.
We'll be right back.
I don't have a record player, so I can't vouch for the remastering. But no, I've been very much on board with the way it's looking, the way it's shaping. I retook all the shots again from the albums. We set up the album shots for each of the, there are albums, 10 albums, 8 albums. And we reshot with the same lighting, same cropping, except that the pictures of me now. So you've got face value, but the crop is original crop, but the picture is something that was done in New York a couple of months ago. Did that with all the album covers. Well, yes, but it's me playing bagpipes on a keyboard. I mean, I can play bagpipes properly, and that do actually sound like the worst instruments in the world. I've actually got 2 sets at home, and I love playing them. I love the sound of bagpipes anytime for me. I find it invigorating and exciting. But I chose to learn to have lessons on those pipes, and I can play Amazing Grace. You know, I can get by. Between reading between the lines, the connection is that I've always thought Both Sides is my best record, and I've always loved it the most. And I think I would, you know, I talk about them all. They're all parts of my story, and I just have a particular soft spot for Both Sides. I think there's a lot of songs on there that are a lot better than people remember them, if they ever heard them at all. You know, a Mojo journalist from England, you know, he said, I don't know what I was doing when Both Sides came out. I missed it completely. And I said, well, that's why I'm putting it out, so you can rediscover it. Because that's the reason. It's like people, you know, garage rock is grunge rock, garage rock, this rock, that rock. You know, stuff was coming out, and you're a writer, and you've got to write about stuff that's current. And I just didn't fit into his agenda that particular month. So he misses a whole album of my stuff, which is pretty reasonable. But that's exactly the opinion that I was hoping for. I discovered something I didn't know existed. Now I'll go and find out how much I like it.
Phil Collins' 1993 Both Sides solo album continued his evolution from the intimately personal issues of heartbreak, betrayal, and recovery to the large societal issues of homelessness, disenfranchisement, even war, which Phil had begun exploring in his previous blockbuster called But Seriously.
More love and pathos and death and destruction across the planet. Certainly there are some things that posed on both sides of the story that really, I think, are very fundamental to the way we live now. You know, I mean, I do remember telling a story of, you know, we all have our dinner and kids say goodnight. They go up to their own room and they go up into their little labyrinth and they play football station, you know, PlayStation, and they do their homework and hopefully, and then they'll do something else and something else, and then eventually about midnight, you hope, they go to bed. Whereas when I was growing up, it was a lot different. You know, it was people all lived, they sat around the same TV. I find myself now, I mean, I said to my 14-year-old the other night, you know, he comes and says, love you, Dad, kiss you, see you tomorrow morning. And I say, see, are you going to bed now then, are you? He says, yeah. I said, well, you know, when I bought a lot of expensive house in Miami, I thought maybe I'd see a bit more of you. And he says, oh, okay, well, I'll stay then. I said, no, you better go. You know, don't make me feel bad about asking. But I find that I wrote a song about my dad playing music upstairs while he watched TV, you know, which is all my life from But Seriously. A similar situation, you know. I used to go upstairs and do the same thing. Life, it repeats itself. He said to me after he heard it, he said, I love that song. I said, it makes me feel terrible now. I said, no, you go and enjoy yourself, you bastard. Go and enjoy yourself. But he, you know, he gets it. And I just, you know, we all think everybody's going to be around forever, and they're not. And times are changing. Catch it while you can. You never know when it's going to catch it while you can. Well, I can say it's my passion and I did my best. I love you too. Bye-bye.
There's a spectacular live performance of In the Air tonight, included on the bonus disc of Face Value by Phil Collins. I'm Redbeard. Thanks to Phil Collins for going way beyond any call of duty to do this interview while still just days out of major spine surgery. Hopefully, see Phil Collins with Genesis in fall 2021 for the first time in a quarter of a century. Special thanks to Tony Smith and to Dan Neer. In the Studio is produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2021, all rights reserved. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Get more at inthestudio.net.